Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, once again, you are listening to the Eastern Airlines Radio Talk Show. This is our 72nd radio broadcast. Once again, we're coming to you from Jacksonville, Florida, Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts, Delray Beach, Florida, Grand Junction, Colorado, Roaring Gap, North Carolina, and Cape Coral, Florida. I'm Jim Hart, and I'm here on the beautiful island of Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts. We are an all-talk show. Let me tell you how to reach us. First, if you're listening to us live now, you've already discovered how to tune us in. Second, if you would like to talk with us live on the show, just call us at 213-816-1611 or toll-free at 877-572-1861. Let me repeat those numbers. 213-816-1611 or toll-free at 877-572-1861. Now, once you have called into the program and want to go live with us, then you need only to press the number 1 on your telephone dial keypad, and that will let us know that you're available for an on-the-air conversation. Last week's guest, Mr. Ed Weigel, president of Eastern Airlines, presented the present state of the new Eastern Airlines. We plan to have him back with us again in the future to bring us up to date at that time.
Jim, this week's program will take us back 80 years into the past. We like to share news from the Eastern history books and chose the month of July 1932 for Eastern Air activities. They shed light as to why this airline is still in the memories of thousands, wanting her to come back and fly the skies once again. Ed Weigel, we hope you will make all your still Eastern family proud and bring her back to life. I'd like to introduce our host for tonight's show. I'll start with Jan Bushkai in Delray Beach. Are you there, Jan?
Yes, I am. Hi, Bill.
How are you tonight?
Fine. How are you doing?
Good. And Chuck Albright, he's left the Villages, and we find him tonight in Cape Coral, Florida. Hi, Chuck.
How you doing?
Good. Steve Thompson in Roaring Gap, North Carolina. How's your temperature, Steve?
Hi, Bill. It's a cool 78 degrees up here in the beautiful mountains of Roaring Gap.
Sounds wonderful. Our home office in Jacksonville is being manned tonight by Captain Neil Holland and Miss Margaret Bars. You folks on board?
Yes, sir, we are.
Sure are, and we're right close to 100 degrees in temperature.
Wow, that reminds me of where I am. This is Bill Joseph in Grand Junction, Colorado.
Jim?
Hello. Oh, okay, let me remind listeners once again of our call-in phone numbers, 213-816-1611, or toll-free at 877-572-1861. And remember to chat with our guest and our host. Just press number 1 on your dial pad. Give us a call and become a regular on our show.
Why don't we cut for an advertisement from our newest sponsor, the Retired Eastern Pilots Association, better known as REPA.
Hello, my name is Captain Jerry Frost. I am a retired Eastern Airlines pilot. On behalf of the Retired Eastern Pilots Association, better known as REPA, I'm happy to say that we are a sponsor of the EAL Radio Show's website and weekly radio broadcast. Our organization was founded in 1971 by two retired captains, Captain Lou Transu and Captain E.M. Taylor. We have always had wonderful support from the affiliate members who have joined REPA. They take part in our annual conventions and receive our great magazine, Repartee. The word repartee is defined as having a quick and witty reply, hence the tie-in with REPA. If you have read any of our magazines, you'll really understand why the name was chosen. Over the past 80 years or more of Eastern Airlines, many great stories have been told by Eastern pilots on the pages of Repartee. By joining REPA as an affiliate member, you will receive a disc containing copies of 35 years of these publications, plus the biannual publication of Repartee. You will also be welcome to attend our annual conventions, the next being held in Hilton Head, South Carolina, in November. The cost is only $35 annually for membership. You can go to the document page of the EAL Radio Show website and print the application for membership. We're happy to support the work of the radio show and its website and wish it continued success. Oh, by the way, take a look at the REPA website where you will also see the EAL Radio Show's radio play icon on the homepage. Enjoy listening to the show live from our site or return and listen to the archive shows. You'll find many interesting Eastern features by going to www.repaonline.com. This is Jerry Frost. Thanks for listening.
Tonight we're going to take you back 80 years. And to start with, Jim, what was the news July 1932?
On that date, Neil, AirGent fakes place among airline officials. AirGent, that is spelled A-I-R-G-E-N-T. There's a comparatively new personage in air transportation that carries a rank of some importance for the flying public. He is the airline informational postal AirGent. There is one AirGent in each city along the airline, and when a reservation or information is requested, he goes into action. He has the official airline guide, individual timetables, and other information at his fingertips. And upon being called by a branch office or an individual, he gives the desired information or makes the reservation in a minimum of time. In New York, the AirGent is Robert G. Moore, and a busy time he has. Postal Telegraph serves all of the several different airlines operating from New York, and many calls are made to Mr. Moore each day. It has been found that centralizing air travel information in this way and making it readily available to anyone seeking it provides a smooth and effective manner of serving air travelers.
Well, this news date is July 1932. Rescued Sea Flyer returns over organized airway. Stanley Felix Hausner, the Polish-American flyer who made an unsuccessful attempt to fly the ocean from New York to Poland, flew back from Miami to Newark over a highly organized airway last month. He traveled home in a multi-engine, radio-equipped Curtiss Condor of Eastern Air Transport, and the route over which he flew was in great contrast to the desolate sea route. Miss Alice West, one of Eastern's air flying hostesses, spoke to him as follows regarding him.
To quote Alice West, Mr. Hausner was a perfect air passenger. He was so reserved and quiet on the whole trip north from Florida. At every field along the way, crowds turned out to see him, and newspaper reporters and photographers besieged him. But he just smiled. His wife is a darling, and I think is just as brave as he is. It takes nerve to let someone you love go away on an adventure such as his. Both of them have courage, but I would prefer to do all my flying over an organized airway rather than over an ocean. We have landing fields every 30 miles and radio and lots of other things that an ocean doesn't have. That's why it takes such courage to fly over an ocean, but it doesn't take any courage to fly with an air transport line over the organized airway.
Mr. Hausner was much interested in the autopilot that this airplane is equipped with. I told him he was flying on the largest land plane in regular use in America and the only commercial airplane equipped with an autopilot. He knew all about it, but asked me a lot of questions and seemed very interested.
Another news story dated July 1932, arrived and feeling fine. John W. Massary, 85, was a passenger on a multi-motor airliner of Eastern Air from Jacksonville to New York recently. A few days after his flight, a Florida friend of his came into the company's Jacksonville office to show a letter from Mr. Massary, who lives at 24 Henry Street, Everett, Mass. Arrived and feeling fine, the 85-year-old wrote, had a delightful trip from Jacksonville to Newark Airport. It was wonderful. Made 7 stops, always a minute or so ahead of time, and each landing and takeoff was perfect. I would like to use the air all the time to go any distance.
Newsday, July 1932, letters from our passengers. Frank J. Colossi, Henry W. Horst Company, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, wrote, I was very favorably impressed with your personnel and the service rendered. Miss Dupreece, the hostess, served a most delightful lunch, explained the various points of interest to passengers, and intelligently answered their questions. Furnishing stock market reports and late editions of newspapers also appeals and is bound to reflect in increased patronage. Dr. J.S. McEwen, Orlando Clinic, Orlando, Florida, wrote, I enjoyed my air trip to Baltimore and returned hugely. Your pilots were very courteous, and your entire staff did everything possible for my comfort and for the rest of the passengers. University official Lester Hartley Geis, Furman University, Greenville, South Carolina, wrote, I think it's only fair that I write you this letter and thank you for one of the most truly marvelous experiences I've ever had. Every time I think of the perfect ease with which your pilots handle the Curtis Condor, I feel confident that you're the operators of the ultimate in travels.
Did you know this date, July 1932, every Eastern Air passenger plane is a multi-engine aircraft, and each is equipped with a two-way radio using both voice and code. Fly with a completely equipped airline, the world's greatest value, taken from news date June 1931. The greatest 8-cent value in the world is the description applied to the use of the United States Air Service. The cost of sending airmail is 8 cents for the first ounce, 13 cents for the additional ounce, but it brings tomorrow's mail today. In the past few weeks, there has been a series of meetings between postmasters and the Aeronautical Chamber of Commerce, civic leaders, and air transport lines regarding the use of airmail, and favorable reports were made from each meeting. The volume of flying mail, which slumped downward when the rates were boosted in July, has turned definitely upward and rapidly gaining ground that it lost, and is stated. When it is considered that airmail flies day and night, covering over 2,000 miles a day, and for journeys of 300 or more miles, saved from a few hours of several days in time, is faster than special delivery and demands preferential treatment. There are no other service that can match it with so little a cost. This service is widely used by banks and other financial houses for speeding ticket checks and drafts for collections, saving many thousands of dollars in interest. Tomorrow's mail today, U.S. mail. This is the slogan of Pennsylvania Airlines, flying between Washington, Pittsburgh, Akron, Cleveland, and it's apt and its modern slogan well worth investigating by modern businessmen.
News date, July 1931, heroic disappointment. Little Miss Eunice Sutton, 12 years old, was ready to take her first airplane trip the other day, according to the Jacksonville, Florida Journal. She was at the airport with her dad, suitcase packed and tagged, ticket in hand, and the big Eastern Air Transport plane, which was to carry her to Atlanta, winging swiftly up from the south. But just as the plane landed at the field to take her aboard, there came an opportunity for her to show that chivalry is far from dead and that thoughtfulness and kindness is a part of even a very young Southerner's character. For as the plane arrived at J.F. Daley, Atlanta businessman also arrived. He hurried into the waiting room where Eunice and her father were and asked for a ticket to Atlanta. The ticket agent was very sorry, but the plane was completely full, every seat sold. Mr. Daley was distressed. He produced a telegram which said, "Come home at once. Your wife is seriously ill." What was he to do? This airplane was his only means of reaching Atlanta that day. Eunice heard all this. She drew her father aside, and they held a whispered conversation, the journal continues. Then she went over to Mr. Daley and said in a very small voice, "You can fly up there in my seat." She was profusely thanked. She stood on the ground beside her little suitcase, still tagged, as the plane sped across the field, climbed into the air, and rapidly disappeared in the direction of Atlanta. She fought back the bitter tears of disappointment that just would creep down over her cheek. And that night, she took a train to Atlanta. But her father promised her that she could fly back to Jacksonville with her two sisters and that he would come up and fly back with them. They lived at 1234 Challen Avenue in Jacksonville.
This news date is July 1931, a gallon of gasoline. Great power is locked up in a gallon of gasoline. Eastern Air uses only the best grade high-test aviation gasoline, since the use of cheap, low-cost automobile gasoline is inefficient and otherwise objectionable to this airline. A gallon of high-grade aviation gasoline weighs just 6 pounds, but it will provide the power for transporting the Curtiss Condor with 18 passengers, a heavy load of U.S. air mail, and baggage a distance of 156 miles. The Condor, fully loaded, weighs 18,000 pounds. Therefore, the gallon of gasoline weighs but 33 one-hundred-thousandths of the total. Yet it delivers a constant flow of 1,250 horsepower from the two Concorde engines with which this Concorde, each Concorde, is equipped for a distance of 8,260 feet. All passenger planes of Eastern Air are multicolored.
Newsdate, July 1932. Meet your hostess. Miss Alice West, a flying hostess of Eastern Air. She regularly flies between the North and South in a big multi-engine, radio-equipped Curtiss Condor of this company, the largest land planes in regular use in the United States. Miss West has traveled many thousands of miles over this organized airway, and a considerable number of air travelers point her out as my hostess. Her family connections are most interesting. Her mother, being a direct descendant of John Hancock and a relative of Martha Curtiss, who we all should know is the wife of George Washington. Her father, who is manager of several of New York's most prominent hotels, including the Oliver Cromwell, Fifth Avenue, Whitehall, Parkside, and the Hotel White, is a direct descendant of Lord Cornwallis West. Miss West is a graduate of Rosemont College.
News date, July 1931. Washington's Air Office, Washington, D.C., obtained its first airline waiting room and ticket office last month when Eastern Air Transport opened a downtown office in the Shoreham Building, 15th and H Streets. the new office is a model of its kind and compares favorably with similar offices of other air transport modes. It was established under the direction of Mr. Fred P. Moralton, Division Traffic Manager for Eastern Air. This building is on the site of the old Shoreham Hotel and is one of the most renowned spots in Washington. Due to its proximity to the White House, many presidents and other national celebrities were to be seen in its lobby. Transport Center. Reservations and information over all airlines will be provided at this office. The corner where it's located is already the Transportation Center of Washington, with offices of four trunk line railroads and several steamship offices now in the immediate neighborhood. Passenger traffic from Washington on Eastern Air's big multi-engine airliners is of such volume that full accommodations for travelers are necessary. The new office, which is much like the New York waiting room of this company, was therefore established.
Let's take a commercial break and listen to an Eastern TV ad.
Brian, look! There's a new kind of plane! That's Eastern's new Boeing 727 jet! Look how high the tail is! 34 feet! Look where they put the jets! In the tail assembly. That's one reason it's so quiet. The passengers are always riding ahead of the sound. Where does it fly to? I don't know.
It flies north. You can hightail it on Eastern's new 727 jetliner to Washington, Philadelphia, and Boston. And a unique new dining service is worth writing home about. Choose from a selection of superb entrees like lobster Newberg, filet mignon with bordelaise sauce. Prepare it as you like it. Eastern 727 jet, quiet as a library. The smartest way to leave town? Come fly with Eastern.
Ed Wiegel's commentary last week still creates excitement for me with thoughts that Eastern Airlines will be taking off and landing at many of our older destinations. What do you guys think about what he had to say? Are you as excited as I am?
You know, after listening to the news as it was 80 years ago and what these guys put up with the new technology that Ed Wiegel was telling us about, we've come a long way, haven't we? But his comments were, to me, like Jim is saying, really excites me, the fact that Eastern Airlines will one day again, and I feel very confident about this gentleman and the plans that they have made. As a matter of fact, he emailed me yesterday or day before yesterday that after our radio show last week, apparently they must have gotten together and decided that, yes, now is the time to go forward. So I believe they're going to move as fast as they can. Recall that he did talk about buying another airline that had a 121 certificate, and so this will enable them to, I believe, move faster than what we did in our skit, which took us 6 months to do. And so I'm very encouraged with his comments. Chuck, what are your thoughts? I think you asked him a question about maintenance, and it was very interesting what his comments were. Chuck?
Yeah, of course, any major airlines, that's one of the big cost factors of these ISAs, besides, I guess, the fuel and employee benefits and stuff of that. But, yeah, I did, because he is going to, I think he said below the wings they were going to farm out the work, you know, that they weren't going to be Eastern employees. And a lot of airlines are doing that today. I guess it's cost effective. And beginning out, I can see his point. Some of it's very expensive, especially the checks and the engine overhaul portions of flying an aircraft, so to speak. But as far as maintenance is concerned, he seems to have a grip on what's his problems are going to be. And I'm sure he has people in his immediate group there that have relayed information to him about the cost and everything of all the different checks. He probably wouldn't have a large maintenance payout for about the first 5 years, because he's going to have planes that's got most of the checks done to him, or have them done before he receives them. So, I understand they're new aircraft, aren't they?
Yeah. Chuck, when they contract maintenance services, let's say on the airplane that Ed said they intend to purchase, didn't he say 25 or 30 of these?
Yeah, that's correct.
But he didn't say whether they were new or just what age and what condition and so forth. But when you contract a maintenance service out like that, and an airplane comes into the gate and it has mechanicals, you still have to have mechanics and maintenance employed by the airline. Is that not correct?
Well,
it looks like to me it would be.
In our case, back in the old days, yes, that's true. You would have maintenance at the terminal. I happened to be maintenance at the terminal at one time in my career. But when you farm out the maintenance, what you do is you actually hire a maintenance company, and they will do all the general maintenance to the aircraft. And then when it comes time for, let's say, an A-check, that's kind of like the 100-hour thing, they're going to take it to a facility that does A and B checks. And as the time goes on, it's usually every 5 years, if I'm right, between A, B, C, and D. D check is 20 years, so unless he gets very old airplanes, which I doubt very soon they're going to do, because they would be just horrendous to keep up with as far as maintenance is concerned. I don't think he's going to have a big maintenance cost, but he said he was not going to hire below the wings, and to me that means maintenance.
Okay.
I might be wrong, but if he gets fairly new airplanes, he doesn't need a big maintenance crew at first. I'd say if he buys new airplanes in 5 years, he better think very seriously about hiring his own maintenance people, because you got to find somebody who knows how to work on an Airbus, and that was one of the problems Eastern had when we first got them.
Yeah,
is to train all of us. You know, it took us a while to all get trained. Pilots were a little bit, I wouldn't say easier, but they came by the training a little bit faster, whereas maintenance had to learn all the systems and everything, that the intricacies, you know, the valves and things of that sort. So I think he'll be all right for the first 5 years if he farms it out.
Like he said, they are talking and negotiating with a provider for, like his comment, nose-to-tail maintenance. And these would be third-party providers, and, of course, operating out of Miami. And I think he said that they were going to hold these providers to the block hour that they have contracted for, and block hour costs maintenance-wise. And passengers would be more of marketing and sales and reservations and so forth.
Well, like you see, now you got to also come to the realization that whoever stands in front of the public represents the airline, and whoever services the public represents the airline. So
Yeah. That's
what's above the wings. You know, all the people in reservations, the flight attendants and cabin crews, they're all going to meet the public. And so I can see his point. They're going to be Eastern employees. They're going to wear Eastern uniforms. But people that blow the wings, they don't know who works on the airplanes.
Yeah.
They might see you come up and sign the logbook off. That was my job primarily. I was a master mechanic. I would go up and sign the log off. But that's all they ever really see of maintenance. So if he gets the right people that knows the airplane, his costs will be whole. When he gets the wrong company and they go in there and try to learn by trial and error, he'll never meet the time limits.
Hey, Bill, let me bring Bill in here. Do you remember he was talking about Southwest Airlines, and they are making a big deal about not charging folks for putting their baggage on the airplane.
I remember that.
Yeah. And it was interesting, the way he explained it is that they can't charge because of their reservation system. And I couldn't follow that. I don't know exactly how that works. Maybe you or Jim might have more knowledge as to why can't they figure that in during with the reservation system that they're using.
Well, it would be very similar to a United Airlines system, which would be Apollo, and then the old Eastern Reservation System 1. To merge those two units together is almost an impossibility, and that's the problem they're having when they just took over AirTran, and AirTran does charge for bags because their system allows for the transaction to take place. But they would greatly like to charge on Southwest, I'm sure, but they just don't have the ability to do it right now.
Oh, okay.
You know, you were talking about the maintenance thing. I can remember when I was managing the station up in Hartford, we had on-call maintenance, as it was known in those days, where other airline mechanics actually responded to our needs as they came about. That can be either, as I say, from another airline, or sometimes we used A&P mechanics, licensed mechanics from a fixed base operator, someone who is on the site all the time, working generally on smaller airplanes, but qualified and trained to work on the airplanes we were operating, and we use those with some success. The thing that I got out of this presentation by Ed was that while fleet type and size and routes and gate space at Miami Hub are all very interesting, I think the degree that they have gone into the future planning and understand the relationship with other carriers, the alliances that they're going to enter into, that's the future, and that's where the 10-year plan is. And I was very, very much impressed with that work.
Yeah. Yeah, the low-cost airlines as opposed to what he calls the legacy carriers. You recall that? He mentioned the legacy carriers are those that have alliances, like American has One World. Delta Airlines uses SkyTeam, which they have an alliance with Air France. And United, let's see, who do they use? Didn't come to me. Oh, Star. I'm not so sure. I think that's Star Alliance, that they have an alliance with Lufthansa. So he did say that they are going to go the route of the legacy carrier, and eventually they hope to come in, just like he was talking about Paul, what's his name, Branson, Virgin Airlines, what's his first name? I can't think of his first name. Branson, anybody listening out there? Can they help me?
I don't know either.
Virgin Airlines?
Yeah, Virgin Airlines. I'll have to catch up with you guys next week.
Okay. All right. Good having you with us. Bye. But at any rate, with Virgin Airlines, he thought he could do it all himself. Was it Charles Branson? That's Charles Bronson. 856. We've got a caller at 856.
Hi, you got Donna here from the Jersey Shore. How's everybody?
Oh, doing fine, Donna. Thanks for being with us. Were you able to hear last week's show?
I did. I heard last week's show with interest. I was a flight attendant from 1970 through 1991, based in Kennedy, New York, New Jersey, and then Atlanta after the strike. And I want to say, with the maintenance issue, if you can have the face checks farmed out to somebody, but when you have an airplane limp in that has a mechanical or has a pop slide or has an extinguisher that had to be used in flight, there better be some maintenance standing there to take care of business, or there's going to be a flight delay going out. So
yeah,
how would that work? Would we be partnered with another airline? Would they necessarily have the same equipment that we have? How would that work?
Let me jump in on that, Neil.
Yeah.
If you look at this operation into South and Central America, you'll probably find that in each of those airports there's a major carrier. And there would be an agreement signed between the New Eastern and that carrier to provide what is called on-call maintenance. And that's the kind of a situation you've just described there in your commentary. That in South and Central America, there, you're not going to get a company probably that's going to sign on to do the major checks of the airline, as Chuck just said, in a facility of their own, and then be spread out all through the South and Central American area. So there's lots of individual on-call maintenance agreements that settle those problems or respond to those problems that you've just discussed.
Okay, I also want to comment a little bit on Southwest Airlines. I pass ride quite a bit. Those folks at Southwest are sensational. They are the most like Eastern Airlines of anybody I've ever flown. They treat the pass riders with reverence. They board like an A group. It's like a cattle call of A, B, and C. The pass riders are usually at the beginning of B. They're interested that we were former airline employees, and I think that's part of their thing with the not charging for bags. I don't know if they would charge even if they could. They have such a loyal fan base, the way we had in the good old days, because we did things just a little bit differently and a little bit more special than everybody else. Southwest is now doing that.
You know, I bet everyone with Southwest held their breath when Herb Keller stepped aside, the founder of Southwest Airlines, and who successfully ran that airline to the point that you credit them. And it is
they
remarkable.
They had the Captain Eddie factor, the same way the real old-timers loved Captain Eddie and would go the extra mile. Those folks at Southwest loved this guy.
And fortunately, the person, I'm not certain his name, the new president of Southwest is carrying, the philosophy, continuing it. So, boy, they sure are lucky. When you have a change of management, you really don't know what you're going to get.
And how, when we had Colonel Borman, we said, who could be worse than him? And I want to make one final comment, and then I'll shut up and go back to making dinner. Richard Branson.
Richard
Branson. That's right.
All right.
Crazy looking guy with the blonde hair and the blonde beard.
Yeah, he's out.
Sir Richard.
Sir Richard.
Yes.
Matter of fact, you see what his latest venture is? He's out on a surfboard that has a parachute attached to it. And I think he wants to go across the English Channel or the Atlantic or Pacific Ocean, Lord knows what. But what a remarkable adventure person he is.
What a guy. Well, I certainly enjoy the broadcast. Thanks for letting me share, and I'll be listening. Take care.
Hey, Donna, what's your last name before you check out?
DeMarco, DeMarco, Donna DeMarco.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much for being with
us. You're welcome.
Tonight.
Where on the Jersey Shore are you, Donna?
I'm in Bayhead, which is right near Point Pleasant.
Oh, yes. Very nice.
It's hot here, though, I'll tell you. Everybody's saying the heat, let's go to the shore. And they get down, and they go, it's just as hot here. What's going on? It's really broiling in New Jersey.
Jan, you've been listening to all this conversation. You have any thoughts about last week's show and about the New Eastern?
I do. I was particularly impressed with the depth of Mr. Weigel's airline knowledge. He thoroughly seemed to understand the industry, both as it was and also as it is. My money is on Mr. Weigel, as a matter of fact, and speaking about money, if a stock offering is still an option, I believe it would be a very successful way to raise capital. And have you heard anything further about a stock offering?
No, just a comment. I think it was, I wish it were real instead of maybe jokingly, he asked, do you think that you might be able to garner about 1,000 people with $1,000 each? But the figure he used was about 2,000. I thought, wonder if there are 2,000 former employees of Eastern Airlines that would be willing to buy $1,000 worth of shares of the new Eastern Airlines. And I thought, you know, there are, what, there are 11,000 members of EARA. So if, you know, if they are trying to raise the seed money, the initial capital to get the airlines up and running, then I think a private offering might be a good move, is to come up with a private offering.
I'll be first in line.
And yeah. I'll be second.
Second. I'll have to ask my wife. Steve, how about you? You got any comments?
Yes, I do, Neil. And first of all, I have a question. In one of our skits, we were going to talk about Mr. Weigel's background before we heard about his interest in the new Eastern Airlines, and I didn't pick up on any of that. Can anybody fill us in on what his background is, where he came from, and what experience he had before he entered into this venture?
You know, I went on the internet and I looked him up, and there is a little bio. I think Margaret, you looked him up also recently, and you found some interesting stuff about Ed.
Yeah, I did. He graduated from, I believe it was West Point. I probably should confirm that again, but it was some military college. And then also, I believe he has a master's in finance. So
yeah,
that's very impressive.
Yeah. And he has been with several other airlines.
Yeah.
And it seems like to me, I recall him being appointed by a court as a trustee. But here again, I looked him up about a year ago, and my memory faded since then. But he does have, from what I was able to pull up about a year ago. And you might want to do that.
Yeah, I will
do that. Yes. And just do a browse of Ed Weigel. Golly, you can find anybody. You know, I've been looking up former classmates that I thought maybe I could have a high school reunion, because I went to a high school that we were really kids that were kicked out of the better high schools in the Miami area, and they put us in a vocational training school facility in about a 17-story building. But when you start getting on the internet and looking up people, it's amazing how many people you can find out there.
That's true. Another thought I have, of course, and probably all of us have, we think of ourselves in as being a part of this effort, but yet we are about 30 years younger than we are now. And I had a dream the other night that I got a call from crew scheduling from the New Eastern Airlines for a trip. They assigned me to a trip. And I get to the airport, and I run into all of these people I recognize from years ago that I worked with. And I'm all of a sudden, reality hits me, and I think to myself, oh, my God, I hope that they don't realize that I'm 77 years old now and call me off of this trip.
Can I read something to you folks about Ed?
Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
It says that he's a graduate, as Margaret said, from the United States Military Academy, West Point, and the University of Northern Colorado, with an MBA in finance. He began his career in 1985 at Eastern Airlines, where he moved on the finance, operations, and marketing staffs. In 87, he moved to Shearson Lehman Brothers, where he specialized in aircraft finance, working with a number of U.S. and foreign airlines. In 1991, he participated as a co-founder in the startup of Atlantic Coast Airlines, where he served on the board for 6 years. He also served as senior vice president of corporate finance of Atlantic Coast from 91 to 94. In 95, he led an investment group in the privatization of BWIA, the National Airline of Trinidad, and served as the airline's president and chief operating officer in 1995 and 1996. In 1997, he participated in the acquisition of Chautauqua Airlines, a regional airline in the U.S. operating for U.S. Airways, and served as that airline's chief executive officer from 1998 to 1999. Since 1999, he's been a consultant to the airline industry, working on such projects as advertising, and the trustee in the bankruptcy of Tower Airlines, and advised several major investment funds on their airline industry investment.
That's impressive.
He's been around.
Where did you find that, Bill?
Well, if I told you that, Jim, I'd have to kill you.
you're fading in and out, Bill.
I Googled Ed Wiggle.
Okay.
Wall Street Journal.
Wow.
Maybe very
I'll
good.
Write that down.
Fastest finger in the West.
There you go.
That thoroughly sums it up on one.
I think you're impressed, aren't you, Margaret?
I am terribly impressed.
Margaret, how about sharing with us your thoughts about that? I know you've got some.
Well, I do, and although I was never an employee and was only a passenger from time to time on Eastern Airlines, I still remember the great service and the attention that we passengers received, and it was certainly my favorite airline to fly. But I just wanted to make a comment that Eastern Airlines was indeed a rich airline. And what I mean by that, it was rich in its history, having Eddie Rickenbacker and Floyd Hall at the helm for such a long time, being the official airline of Walt Disney World, creating that great Wings of Man campaign, and even creating the red-eye flights. That's just to mention a few. And also I want to say that the old Eastern Airlines was rich in the unwavering loyalty displayed by its past employees and passengers. And if you think about that, that's simply amazing considering the number of years that have passed. So what a great foundation for the new Eastern Airlines to build upon. So my final words on this are, rise from the ashes, you beautiful blue and white birds. We're ready when you are.
Excellent, Margaret.
Amen.
Very good. Very good.
Jim? I have some comments. Yes, thank you, Neil. Of course, many of us go back to the days when we transitioned from propellers to jets, and in my experience, most of which was in New York City at the home office, I learned how expensive it was for our company to have its offices at 10 Rockefeller Plaza, and how expensive it was in many other ways. Let's say the advertising, for instance. We employed three of the major advertising agencies, Young & Rubicam, Benton & Bowles, and Gaynor & Dukas. And that's when we had a $25 million ad budget. And I'm talking about 1963, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, in that area. And I'm thinking that if when the company starts its operations, I'm almost certain that they're going to choose Miami for its base of operations, for its home office, because so many things have changed since those 60s and 70s. And in terms of communication, we didn't have a lot of the things back then that we have today. And I'm sure that the company is going to take advantage of many of those things to save as much money as possible. And, of course, the whole Miami area has grown so much since those days. It will offer us just about everything that we could have in a large city like New York. Now, New York probably, because of its location and so on, its massive population, will play a prominent role in the new Eastern. But as far as a home office or a hub of financial operations and other things, I think Miami will be the one. What do other people think about that?
Yeah, I'd like to see it headquartered in Miami. I'm kind of partial about Miami, even though I was born in the Carolinas, North Carolina. But I spent 25 years of my early life in Miami and went through my mechanics training and also my pilot's licensing. I was all done there in Miami. So Eastern was the name of that, that was the airline of Miami. If you could just get a job with Eastern Airlines, it's kind of like the old days of the railroad. Boy, you know, the most sought after job back before airplanes was a railroad. And if you could just get a job with a railroad, boy, you had it made. You had that pension that the railroads offered. And but that's the way Eastern Airlines was in Miami, the way I remember it. And, of course, there's Pan American down there also, but Eastern was, you just kind of associate the two, the city of Miami, and I'm sure they'll be extremely happy to have Eastern back in the air and headquartered in Miami.
There's one thing, too, Neil, that I remembered because I took part when I was based in Washington. Eastern wanted the greater Miami area to get a feel for the impact of Eastern's payroll in the area. So what they decided to do is to pay in one pay period over $250,000 in silver dollars. And I, and in Washington, I've still got pictures here at my home of me on a horse with a long gun standing beside a Brinks truck as it unloaded bags and bags of silver dollars onto a Super Constellation. And that airplane landed, of course, in Miami after taking off in Washington and was met by another fellow similarly attired. And you can imagine how the silver dollars flowed through the greater Miami area once they were distributed by the employees. And and one thing, of course, since that time, I've become a coin collector. And do you know that some of those silver dollars, just one in particular, an 1893 Morgan silver dollar in excellent condition, that is with the mint mark S for San Francisco on it, sells today for about $500,000, that one coin.
My goodness.
And I've been acting as sort of a sort of an ex officio master of ceremonies at the Eastern Airlines picnic in Miami for the last number of years. And I just keep mentioning to those people, I say, how many of you folks still have those silver dollars? And a few of the people raised their hands, and I said, please, let me know if you've got the 1893.
That's interesting. But, you know, I recall you asked Ed Weigel about whether they would take any preference to former Eastern employees. And I like his answer with that, the fact that they have been working with Vito Borelli, with the president, the new president of EARA, and he has been working with Ed and their team about using former Eastern people. So that was encouraging to hear that remark.
I agree.
Well, we're getting close to our arrival time, our departure time, or whatever, sign-off time, I guess we call it. But any other comments?
Well, I have a comment. Jim, I'll give you $10 for a copy of that picture of you on the horse with the big gun.
You've and got it.
And I'll get 10 U.S. silver dollars for
Oh,
you.
Good, Luann. I'm looking forward to it.
Is that called numismatic or something like that? What's the name that they use for coins?
Yes, a numismatist is a coin collector.
Okay.
A numismatist.
Okay.
Jim, you better stop talking like that. I'm getting excited on this end of the line.
Well, I think I hear the sign-off music in the background. So, Jan, how about putting this episode 72 in the archive for us?
Of course, Neil. Ladies and gentlemen, we've enjoyed being with you this evening, and we hope in our future shows you will be a part of us. You've heard a lot of talk from our hosts, but we would rather hear from you. Tell us what you think of our shows, how we might improve our broadcast, who you think would be a good guest interview, and just anything you might want to talk about. We know many people are taking vacations this time of year, but wherever you are, if you have a computer, you can listen to our show. Maybe you will want to tell us how your Interline Pass travel went on your vacation this year. Please plan to be with us next week for episode 73, when we once again bring you the Eastern Radio Talk Show. From all of your hosts at the EAL Radio Show, we say good night.
Good night, Eastern people.
Good night, Eastern people. Good night, everybody.
God bless.
Every dream.